Welcome to Minority Corner.
With Annette Game.
And James.
That's you.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, gay.
And ladylike.
Already fucking it up. 2 seconds into the episode. Here we go. Welcome. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. This week on Minority Corner.
What you got in your bag of tricks?
Well, up in my bag of tricks, I got tricks for tricks.
Oh, tricks for tricks.
Calling out all the tricks. No, not to be confused with Tori Spelling's movie from the 90s called Trick. I don't know if you saw
Are you
that.
Kidding me?
Yeah, she had a movie. I think she played best friends to these two like gay guys or something. Anyways,
what?
Not talking okay. about that this week. I am revisiting something that I promised I would. It's my continuation of the history of immigration, but this time we're coming at it from the East. We're going in from the history of Asian immigration into the U.S. And we're going to myth bust. I'm going to myth bust something for you. So get out your myth buster because I'm busting it out.
I am ready for my myths to be busted.
But do you know what myth I'm going to be busting? You just want them all busted.
Uh-oh. Oh, is it me being racist? What's going on? What's the myth that's being busted?
The myth that we're going to be busting is the myth of the model minority. Gotta bust it up. My theory is if we track the history of Asian immigration, we're going to be able to look at things from the larger scope and bust it up.
Oh, I love this.
It's my theory, so we'll find out. What are you doing?
I am talking about 10 laws that make you wonder if The Handmaid's Tale is actually true nowadays.
Oh, this is fascinating. I haven't seen any of it. Will I still be able to keep up?
Well, yeah, it's just basically oppressive laws.
Oh, okay.
That are terrible for women.
Gotcha. But just, you know, but you know what I love? It's like you sprinkled a little bit of sugar on it. Because I need a little bit of pop culture for me to understand anything.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand unless you sprinkle a little pop culture on it, and now I'll be able to digest it.
It's true. I just feel like we need something to relate to because people are getting all on their high and mighty horse saying that it's coming. Well, you might be surprised because it might already be here.
Damn! Didn't even know.
What?
Wow.
Mind blown.
Minds are getting blown all over the place. Get a rag. Get ready to clean up your mind because we're going to bust it up.
Ooh, I like that. It's nasty.
Ooh, get nasty.
We got so much to talk about, James.
But before we talk about any of the things that we planned we were going to talk about, you know, I get these ideas like 5 seconds before we're going to hit record.
Annette,
I feel like you and I are part of like the nasty generation.
What does this mean?
Because like we love the phrase, like you and I love a get nasty phrase. We love it. Like, ooh, let's get nasty.
So I like it and then I hate it. So I'm glad you're bringing this up because I like talking about getting nasty. And I think like nasty is fun because it's like, ooh, nasty. But at the same time,
like nasty boys, like Janet's nasty, right?
Yeah,
she told us to get
that.
Nasty. With 86, she was like, get nasty, everybody.
And it worked.
Mm.
But maybe you can answer this question for me. And maybe this is just me being an oblivious, stupid, straight lady who's not a part of the culture, so I don't know.
Oh,
but I've been watching a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race, right?
Okay, yeah.
Excellent show. Great theater. And the commercials, there's one commercial for underwear called Nasty Pig. And time I see it, I'm like, why would somebody want to wear underwear that has a giant-ass thing that says Nasty Pig on it? Because if I was about to bone down with some dude and he took his pants off and said Nasty Pig on it, that just makes me think of, like, racist and corporate awful people.
Interesting. Yeah, I have the reverse effect. I get a little bit of a boner.
Oh, really?
Especially because not that, like, I'm in, not trying to yuck anybody's yum. I'm not.
No, I'm not
like,
either. I'm just confused.
I'm not fully into, like, there's a whole, like, the pig culture. It just means getting, like, raw and just, like, sweaty and just, like, because, like, pigs roll around in mud because they love it. So it's, like, it's just really dirty, nasty sex. So it's almost like you're saying, like, nasty sex.
Okay, or, then like, that makes more sense.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It's I like that. Whereas I'm thinking about, like, a cop and I'm, like, gross.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the last thing I thought about. Well, now you've ruined that for me.
Sorry.
Time to get rid of all my nasty pig jock straps.
I'm sorry.
Well, you know, and you know, and I think we need to do more deep dives into queer culture that I can do. I've not been doing my job. If you were watching this and thinking cops, I haven't been a good
you've been
good
doing
friend.
Your job. Okay. I
can't keep up with all your questions.
Well, people are afraid to ask, so I thought I would ask since you're bringing up nasty, and that's the most recent example of nasty that I've been around.
Well, now that that's been debunked, can we get back on the nasty train?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Because, like, yeah, I think, because, like, you know, there's certain kinds of people who will, like, you know, you could say nasty and it doesn't mean, like, it means something. I feel tingly and excited when I hear it.
It depends for me. If somebody called me nasty, I would be offended.
Well, that's, like, but, like, if they're, like, get nasty. Ooh, let's get nasty with it.
Then I'm like, into that.
I feel like Janet, yeah, because Janet coined it. And then a lot of, like, even Britney had a song where she kept saying, kept whispering, get nasty. In it when she had her song.
Yeah. You know what? Mm-hmm. I feel like it's the same sort of thing as ratchet. No one wants to be called ratchet, but a beat that's ratchet is sick.
You're into it. You're like, ooh, that's ratchet. Give me that.
Yeah.
Give me that beat. Although Beyonce had the adverse effect with it because she wrote a song saying, nasty, put your clothes on, you nasty. And it was not nice.
See?
And it was not inspiring.
She's calling somebody nasty.
See, it's different when, like, it's different when you're inviting someone to get nasty with you. Like, let's get nasty. Or you're claiming yourself, I'm going to get nasty on you, right?
Yes. That's sexy. That's good. That's fun. But if somebody called you nasty, like, then you're like, wait a minute.
You nasty. Could you imagine? Like, you're, like, dancing, getting your groove on, like, ooh, nasty. Yes. She's getting nasty. Look at that nasty girl.
Hey,
stop it. I'm just trying to do my thing. Okay. Sidetrack. So you saw Guardians of the Galaxy.
I did.
I saw it. Burning hot desire question to ask you. No spoilers. Don't worry, everybody. But I have a hot desire because I've been waiting for someone to discuss this with. And so it's you.
It's me. I'm ready.
Did you find...
I volunteer as tribute.
Yay, you. So there's a new character called Mantis. And I just have questions and I don't know that there's an answer. And I wasn't sure if her portrayal was like stereotypical. Was it offensive or was it like, is it okay? And what I mean is that, like, do you want to walk the listeners to what maybe I'm hinting at or alluding to?
Totally.
Okay.
Okay. This is not a spoiler because it doesn't ruin any plot points.
It's just a character that you see her in the trailers.
Yeah, she's in the movie. She's played by this beautiful woman named Pom Klimtef. I think she's French. I don't know. She's like one of those like it girl sexy ladies. So, and I believe she's half Asian.
Okay.
So in the movie, she plays a character who is basically, and she calls herself this. This is not really a spoiler because it has nothing to do with the plot, but she calls herself a pet to a certain other character who is considered a higher being.
Yeah, he's like a god, essentially.
Right. But this character is also played by an older white man, and she's a younger Asian woman, and I'm his pet. She essentially helps him sleep and says, I help master sleep. These things are problematic.
She also has a very... But on top of that, I think the thing that nailed it home to me was that she has a very thick... Asian accent.
She has an accent for sure.
And do we know if that is her natural accent or
I don't know. That's the thing. I can't, and I'm a little hesitant to put she has an accent. I don't know if I would technically call it Asian because she is French. So I don't know. It's an accent. Everybody else in the whole movie pretty much sounds like an American. Which is also weird for the universe, but whatever. We're going to just, like, chat that.
Thank you so much. Put a pin in it. So maybe that's why it was so jarring to me, because it was a different accent that I just wasn't necessarily, accustomed to in the context of that movie. But, of course, there should be, I think, even more accents.
Yeah, literally everybody is from a different planet, and they all sound like they're from, like, Chicago. Like, what's going on?
Which is one thing. It's true. But one thing to sidebar, because they all came from Chicago. I don't know. All alien races come from Chicago. One thing that I really love about Joss Whedon's Firefly Serenity is that it's a mixture of, in that world... Asia and China took over the entire planet. So as we went out into outer space, everybody speaks both Asian and Mandarin. And it's like in the
wait, let's
or China?
Reverse. What do you mean by Asian?
I'm sorry. Like everyone speaks English and Mandarin. So the writing is all over. You can see that writing all over. Like everyone speaks both. They read both. And that is like, sense that the universe and aliens also speak all of that too.
Yes, that makes total sense. But I feel like they don't really address that in Guardians of the Galaxy. And it's a fun, excellent, I enjoy myself movie.
Fun ride.
Like we were talking about before, that one character to me, I feel like because of the implications that America has in regards to certain stereotypes, that's a little problematic.
Yeah, I agree. And my other thing, though, too, this on the flip side of that, though, if that is her natural accent, it's just weird thing too, because it's like there are that woman does still exist today, and it's not necessarily like a negative thing. Like there is a woman.
No.
Who, yeah. And so it's like it's a double thing too. Like a lot of people would get up, like some gay men get upset because like Cam and Mitchell on Modern Family, right? They're very flamboyant. Right. And there's some who are like, don't show that flamboyant, you know, gay person. But it's like that person does still exist.
Right.
You know, so it's like this
about
like
that. It's about showing multiple sides. It's if you see the one type characteristic constantly over and over and over again, that's when things become problematic. Mm-hmm. It's like the sassy black lady. There are sassy black ladies out in the world. There's nothing wrong with being sassy and being black. But if that's the only portrayal that you get, then you have issues like me where I go out in the real world and I have people going girl to me who wouldn't normally say that to, let's say, a white lady because of the stereotype that's portrayed in television. Yeah. I think it becomes problematic when it's something that we see over and over and over again without a diversifying picture of the type of person, you know?
Especially when Marvel itself, and I work for Marvel, but I gotta throw this out there, but especially when they have a track record of not showing enough Asian folks in their world in cinema. And like, and this is one, and one they did, right? There is, you know, this, you know, half Asian actress who in the movie, but there's a lot of missed opportunities in their past of whitewashing other characters or using Asia again, like white guy goes to Asia. I had this crazy thought. I was at the gym, and it's so interesting that I feel like if let's take Doctor Strange, we've all been focusing on Doctor Strange about like the casting of Tilda Swinton, that they made Tilda Swinton and Doctor Strange. They made it this character who's usually Asian. And I think also part of the reason why, I guess originally Doctor Strange is supposed to take place in Tibet, but because of China's not good relationship with Tibet, they kind of erased all anything for it having to do with Tibet.
Exactly. They just made it Tibet-like,
yes. But my thing is, actually, I think we're missing the point, too. I feel like Doctor Strange, why couldn't Stephen Strange have been an Asian American?
He could have been.
And I think that's
that would have been real cool.
I don't think no one's ever talked about that, of like Stephen Strange did not necessarily have to be a white man, and that would have been so fascinating and so amazing. So another missed
opportunity. How cool would that be? He's going back to, like, let's say he's Asian American and he's going back to a country that he doesn't know but is his roots to learn how to utilize this power. Right. That's fucking way cool.
Yeah.
Than some trope ass Iron Man knockoff that we got.
Would it would have made that something different? I mean, the same thing we've already talked about that with Iron Fist. And here's the other thing, is that no longer can you make the argument that, like, well, he's white in the comics. But I mean, Mantis, like, is played by this, you know, half Asian woman. Do we know that that's her roots in the comics? Like, you've literally
We don't know. Right? I don't know.
Right?
So somebody knows.
Zoe saw, or is that why they only allow you know, people of color
allow us to play characters where we're like painted?
So it's like, you don't even know. Is that the thing?
So
is that the takeaway?
Anger fucking racist fanboys. Yeah. Like, come on.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
You bring up a really good segue when you talked about seeing diversity in what we see in media. And so circling back, you finally watched both Masters of None and Dear White People.
I did. I've seen everything, and we're discussing everything now. I caught up. You've been patient with me. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
I waited. So what'd you think?
excellent, both of them. First, Masters of None, Angela Bassett, Thanksgiving episode. Watch it right now. It's a standalone. You don't need any precursors. Skip to that episode, watch it, and then watch the rest, because I think that that is one of the most excellent television show standalone episodes I've seen in a minute.
I would agree. I would agree with you.
You know?
It's so good. Angela Bassett is so... she's able to really adapt to whatever show she's working on. She will fit that energy and that vibe. When she's working on one of Ryan Murphy's crazy shows, she'll go big and a little campy. She'll go crazy. She goes big. You know, she's doing it, right? Because it's a crazy world he's got. And then in Masters of None... It's so true. She just...
It was crazy. Like, she just... Like, Angela Bassett is already... Everybody knows Angela Bassett... amazing, timeless, beautiful, great actress. But she disappeared in that role where at first it was jarring, where I saw her and I was like, oh, mom's played by Angela Bassett. That's amazing. And then next thing you know, she was just a regular ass mom. Like, she wasn't she's always a little bit glamorous, but she wasn't like full on glamour. She was just like regular glamour. Mm-hmm. It was a testament to show how good of an actress she is, and just the casualness of talking about coming out to your parents, realizing identity, mm-hmm. Being a Black woman, not to mention having Aziz and Sari like mixed into the bunch and totally melding in together. Like, I thought it was excellent.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the one thing I love about Masters of None so much, is that it's so relatable, and it's so weird. Yeah. It's like, why have I not seen this before? Like, even like the group of friends that he hangs out with, or the conversations that him and his friends have, and the experiences that he has of like falling in love, and just like they're able to like depict it. Like, I've never seen a series like depict, you know, when you love someone who you don't know if you can be with. Like, they do it so well. And even the last season of like when you're dating someone and you're living together and you're hitting walls and arguing about stupid stuff, you know, like it's so relatable.
Exactly. No, it's excellent television. I fully embrace it. And I feel like I read this article recently where they were talking about when one group of color is able to boost up another group of color by telling their stories, which is essentially what he has done. Last season he did, you know, the Indian American experience, Muslim experience, and then also told the story of the Chinese experience with his friend Brian, talking with the parents episode where they showed the parents coming immigrant experience. But then this season, I thought it was excellent where they show not only is it the Asian Muslim experience, it's also the Black women experience as well, which goes to show that when you give somebody else a platform, we can bring other people along with us, which I think that we're doing with this podcast as well.
Well, toot, there's our Minority Corner hole. I'll toot it with you. A toot, a toot, toot, toot. But also take specifically to the Black lesbian experience. I don't know that I've actually ever witnessed. I can't think about the last time I witnessed a coming out story of a Black woman. I think Passions. Mm-hmm. I think Passions had NBC's daytime.
Stop it.
So
that's so bad.
Passions where like they would get locked
out of my face.
And it was like it was a crazy soap opera because they would like, they had a doll who could talk and there was like witches. And,
I know,
like,
that show
one
was
of them got
nuts.
Stuck. One of them was an angel and the other one got stuck in a closet the closet was a dimension to hell for a good while.
Stop it.
So that
Passions
was like the
was nuts.
That was the only time I think I've ever seen a young Black woman's coming out experience. Oh, and that Black lesbian, and she became vindictive and crazy and was trying to like murder people.
Oh my god,
stuff.
Passion, stop it. Like,
so that's the only time
like
I've ever heard it. That's the only time I've ever seen that experience. I think it's like
I can't even with Passions. I can't believe you brought up Passions. I haven't thought about Passions since I was like 16.
My memory just got jogged. I don't recommend going back and like watching those episodes of Passions. Let Passions just rest.
Just let Passions go off with the sunset.
One of the worst things ever. Passions was the worst because like you could never tell that they were just trying to stretch out storylines because part of daytime television.
Why are we talking about Passions?
It's happening. You open up this Pandora's box. Part of the daytime television is they have to stretch out storylines because in case you're not there every day. But Passions would like literally have like things would be so slow moving on passions where sometimes they'll use flashbacks in case you missed it. They would flashback to something that happened literally 15 minutes ago. You're like,
stop it.
Do you think that people are just flipping through the channels and not going to like stick around? Well, what happened with that doll who's in the closet trapped in hell with lesbian demon
passions
inside
of
him?
So bad. It was literally bottom, like scraping the barrel for soap operas, and soap operas is pretty low down low.
Hey, as someone who still has aspirations to get on one of the soaps that's not been canceled, looking at you, General Hospital or Days of Our Lives, but there's no black people. There's no black people on Days of Our Lives, so can't get on there.
There is none?
Not really. And I read this article about why, because Days of Our Lives, I guess the demographic of it, and this soap's been around since like the 60s, 65.
Oh my God.
But the demographic is mainly, I guess, like in the Midwest, but there's still black people there.
There are black people in the Midwest? I'll always be surprised that I can't, as someone from the coast, I had to check my own self, because I had a friend who was from Nebraska, and I always thought that Nebraska was just like cornfields and white people. And she brought me her yearbook from Omaha, Nebraska, and there were just pages and pages of black people. So sometimes I got to check myself, you know?
Mm-hmm. One of my best friends from high school, he's half black and he's from Nebraska.
Did he enjoy it?
I don't know.
Okay, I don't know. Go somewhere with it.
I don't feel like talking. Thank you for the follow-up question, Gail. I don't know.
But go watch that. Watch Masters of None, the Thanksgiving episode. It's excellent.
Instead of Passions. So the last thing I wanted to touch on, yes.
Can I just bring up one little line that was from that episode that really resonated from me, the Thanksgiving episode?
Yeah.
They say that black parents view their children as trophies, and when they mess up, it's almost like the trophies are tarnished. I have never heard a more truer statement than that. I've never heard it. So I just had to point that out.
Yeah, and I would have to agree with you, but my favorite line to quote Passions.
Stop it!
Do you know how racist that show was? It was so racist.
I can only imagine.
There was a Latino family who is so crazy.
Like, how are we still talking about Passions?
The rich white family, because they had crazy lines that I can't believe they got away with in the 2000s, where they called one girl, Teresa Lopez Fitzgerald Crane, who was trying to marry Ethan, they called her the Taco Bella of Harmony.
That's terrible. That's terrible.
Told her she needed to go back to the barrio. They also said that she was planning her wedding dress, and they came in and they're like, maybe do they have it in burlap, Teresa? Yeah.
This is terrible. This is one, the 90s, two, soap operas, three, Passions, the worst soap opera ever known to man, but also the most diverse. So it was.
I know. I mean, they had there was four families. There was a black family, a Latino family, and a rich white family, and a middle class family. Like, that was crazy to see. It was revolutionary. All right. There we are. So we should get into the episode.
You want to get into the episode? Let's get into the episode.
Let's get on in. All right. Let's do it. Let's get nasty over here.
Ooh, nasty episode. James's Corner. It's James's Corner. It's James's Corner.
Let's do it up. Let's get nasty with immigration. Does that work? Is that a thing? No? Okay.
It's a little shaky.
I'm all about going to the past to see where we are and how the fuck we got there, right? I'm all about
that. Okay, oh my God, yes.
It's like, where am I? How did this happen? And it's just a lot of things that I feel like were never discussed that just don't get discussed in history. So, you know, we already talked about two episodes ago, we talked about the Brasileiro program, which brought Latinos specifically from Mexico here, and how that immigration funnel to the U.S. and dependency on cheap labor from specifically Mexico was formulated. And we also already know, you know, that, you know, we all know history, or the history according to, you know, Ben Carson, that blacks arrived here through cruise ships from Africa.
Yeah, willingly. It was like a Gilligan's Island situation. They were like, we just got lost to sea.
They were like, I heard about this American dream and I want me some of that. So we already know how the Latinos got here, how the black community got here.
Stop it.
But now let's take a look I did not necessarily know just the history behind Asian immigration to the U.S. So let's take a look at a little timeline. And I think this is going to also feed into, I think it's going to lead into a discussion about the model minority and where that came from, and what is that. And once we know the history, we can pick that apart. So
love it.
All comes down to, in the very beginning, like with any sort of immigration, comes down to money, right? Trade
money,
and
money, money.
So the U.S. Has had trade deals with Asian nations since the mid 19th century, and I would say specific Asian nations. Mm-hmm. So in 1842, there was the Treaty of Nanjing. So that's when Great Britain essentially forced China to open up its ports for trade after they lost the Opium War. So
God damn it.
Which is like, everybody has been loving opium for a long time. Yeah. You've been so addicted to the opiates. There was a fucking war. I want that opium. Give me that opium.
I need to relax.
Everybody needs to calm the fuck down and meditate, okay? Fucking
yeah, we don't need opiates to relax.
And still a lifelong problem. So that happened. So it's like they so they lost the war and they're like, open up your door so we can get them opium. And after that, the
doors were ridiculous.
So once the doors were open from Great Britain, the U.S. was like, oh, hey. And then they were able to secure with the Qing government the Treaty of Wangxia. And I'm pretty sure that's how you spell it because it's phonetically spelled out. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Cool.
Wangxia. So then in 1852, Matthew Perry, he
not from Friends.
No, this is the Matthew Perry. He's at a very
he's really old. He's a time traveler. Well,
this is Commodore Matthew C. Perry, not to be confused with Matthew Perry from the Commodores or Matthew C. Perry from Friends.
Yes. It's a popular name.
Apparently. Well, he was dispatched to open the doors of Japan to American trade, which I also love this. A lot of this information I'm getting from is from the Oxford, like their historical website. Mm.
Which is an excellent resource.
Which is, but I love like the way that they were like, they said that, you know, he was dispatched to open the doors of Japan to American trade. I'm pretty sure through some like, I mean.
Okay, James, you're bringing up a good point that I have to interject as your neighborhood friendly librarian.
Yes.
Every article, no matter where it's written, who it's written by or how it's written, has a bias.
Yeah.
And every, if you are a good researcher, you will notice the bias like you just did. I am giving you props for noticing the bias. You know that it's coming from Oxford, which is a university in England. Mm-hmm. So, of course, when they're telling their story, they're going to at least soften the blow of things that are not favorable in their light. So, thank you, James, for pointing to that. I appreciate it.
They went down there, kicked down the door, burnt all the shit on fire, punched people in the face and said, give me that trade. And that's what happened. So then 1854, mission accomplished. Because you get the treaty of good Matthew Perry, successful. For once, or at least like it's been a while since he's had a hit.
And that was Japan.
Yeah, that was Japan. So that was the Treaty of Kanagawa. And then in 1871, the U.S. also took action against Korea. They imposed the Treaty of Amity and Commerce on the United Kingdom. And that happened of the kingdom that was in Korea. So that happened in 1882. So by the time you get to 1882, the U.S. has, they're like, we're getting all this trade from all these Asian nations that they've forced into this trade. So when you naturally have trade with other countries, like you're not just going to be importing their goods. You're going to get some of the people are going to be like, hey, what's that over there? Like, where are my goods going? I want to go over there too. So you open.
We're trading shit. Let me go there.
It's a two way street, right? So you start developing this relationship. And I think, you know, the Dutch is a really good example of that because they had, you know, they've been a major trading port since for like the last 800 years. And that's when you go to Amsterdam, it's pretty diverse, at least Amsterdam. You go outside, it gets, you know, very white European again.
Oh, as with most port cities tend to be diverse and the rest tend to be not so diverse.
Exactly. So specifically you had the Chinese really got involved in the gold rush period. So from 1848 to 1855, they were like, I'm gonna go get me some of that gold too. And that also, but also not just them, but there was a huge influx of them. And you see still remnants of this when you go to different cities, like especially like in San Francisco, where you and I both spend a lot of time or used to.
Yeah. I mean, when I can cross that bridge, I go there from time to time.
I was all up over there.
I know you lived there.
I did for six glorious years. So also, like, so other people did too from Latin America and Europe and Australia. Everybody was all about that gold. So then after that, that was also followed by the Japanese, followed the Koreans, From the British colonies, part of Asia and India would also follow there. And then, mm-hmm. to add to boot, after the Spanish-American War, the U.S. got the Philippines. And the U.S. was like, I'm gonna take that country. And the Filipinos were also allowed to enter into the U.S. with no problem. It was like, okay, great. So you had all these, like, free, open, and everyone just going, la-da-da-da. And then what happens, and so, and also thinking this is prior to World War II, the Asian population was about, it was small. Prior to World War II, it was about 250,000.
Okay.
So then,
oh, that's tiny.
In 1882, Americans, and again, at this point, you can really say America, this is just white Americans, really. So, in 1882, they were like, there are too many other people around here. So then they introduced the Chinese.
Here we go again.
And this is why it's so fascinating, because, like, listening to this, I'm like, wait a minute, this seems very familiar. Chinese Exclusion Act. It is what it says. So, and from the Chinese Exclusion Act, it spawned many.
They were not sugarcoating any shit with that one.
There was not just like, oh, we're trying to keep America safe act. It was like, buy China, get out of here.
Get out of here.
So, the Chinese Exclusion Act, which from that spawned more laws and amendments to exclude even more. So, it barred entry of Chinese laborers for about 61 years. Diplomatic negotiations between the U.S. and Japan excluded the Japanese in about 1907. So the Japanese were able to work out a deal around 1907. In 1917, an immigration law denied entry to those from the British colony in India. So they just started, like, chomping down at the bits of, like, who was allowed in. And then
you can't come.
Just shutting down the borders. But we'll take your goods, but you just keep your people over there.
Ugh, God.
So Asian immigrants were categorized around this time as alien, ineligible for citizenship by law or court decisions. So then in 1924, this is, the roaring 20s, Immigration Act created the Asia-Pacific Triangle. And so what that allowed them to do was just bar all immigrants from all Asian countries. So the 1924...
Racism!
Just like, wait a minute, we can shut it down. Because it all started with this one act, so they were able to add little laws based on that act of that. And then the last country standing in 1934 was the Philippines, still holding it down, still being able to come up into the U.S. nice and freely. But then the Tidings McDuffie Act came in and was like,
oh, here we go.
You know what they did? They granted independence to the Philippines. And so then they were like, great, now you're free. You can't come in here.
Rude. Oh, not even rude. Racist, horrible, terrible. That's what it is.
So, they were only, I think it says here that it reduced Filipino immigration to about 50 per year. So you can get like 50.
50?
50, yeah. That's what this.
50?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So then World War II happened, right? And so World War II happened. And who was one of the countries that the U.S. was at war with?
Germany.
And?
Japan. I know. I was just taking the snarky way because we never really hear about any German Exclusion Act.
It didn't happen.
The America Free of Brittany Act, the British people out of America.
There were certain countries, there are certain European countries where they were like, we don't want you coming into here. There were some of those, but
That's true. We're not going into that right
now. Not talking about this. This is all about, our relationship with Asia for today. Put a pin in that for another time.
Japan.
So we're fighting Japan. And so the U.S. was like, Oh, hey, China, just kidding. We love you. Just resist Japan, because they didn't want them to, like, side with Japan or anything like that. So to boost China's resistance in 1943, they were like, doors are open again.
Thanks, America.
Yeah, the Citizens Committee to Repeal Chinese Exclusion organized a group. It was a group called the Friends of China. And it was, they had the Magasin Act, which was signed by FDR. And the Magasin Act essentially repealed all the Chinese Exclusion Acts. And then it provided an annual quota of 105 for Chinese immigration and granted Chinese immigrants naturalization rights.
Man.
And so essentially...
Meanwhile...
Right. I know exactly what you're gonna say. Like, meanwhile, like, you know, during this time period, still also think about this, like, you know, there's a path to citizenship and equality for folks who were not even born here. And I'm not trying to be like, you know, pit us against each other, but it's just so interesting that they had a path to naturalization when black folks born in this country didn't even have a pathway to naturalization and to be able to vote and be full citizens.
Right. It was opening up just for trade and treaty and making sure that we have allies. Meanwhile, we have American citizens who are just of Japanese descent that we're interning. Like, something's not right in the water.
Being very specific, and like, it all comes down to money. And there was this quote that, you know, they strategically recast Chinese in this, around this time, they strategically recast the Chinese in promotional materials as saying that they're law-abiding, peace-loving, and courteous people living quietly among us. So they were able to pit the difference between the Chinese and the Japanese. So also creating some, like, sentiment and aggression there, right? And so
pitting one against each other. Crazy, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so at this time, though, folks were like fearing that the influx of, you know, Chinese were going to, again, take away their jobs and drive up, you know, that they were going to be doing they were going to take all these migrant worker jobs or, I mean, jobs that these folks even back then probably were not even going to be, you know, wanting to do. Right.
Yeah. Say a tale as told as racism.
Yeah, a tale as old as racism. And so once that act, the Magnuson Act, then opened up the door to end the exclusion of other groups. So in 1946, the exclusion of Filipinos and Indians also ended, providing that the Philippines and India each had a quota of 100. So there was like, we're opening up the doors, but there's a quota of how many that can enter in there. And Pakistan also, once it gained its independence in 1947, they were allowed entry into there as well. And then Japan, their exclusion ended in 1952. Underneath the McCarran-Walter Act, which brought the Asian exclusion to an end. So essentially, it then took that Asian-Pacific triangle concept and flipped it, and they misaliated it, and they flipped it and reversed it. I love that I could say that coded language. You knew exactly what I was talking about. I'm like,
of
they pulled
I
a
do.
Miss. They pulled a Missy Elliott, and I could just say
I
no
know
more.
What you're talking about.
You already know. So they were like, well, now all these Asian nations, they can all come in, but there was an annual quota of, I think, like 100 for each one of the nations and whatnot.
That's
and
those, it?
And those quotas would they would change at different points in time. Like sometimes it would be a few over time. It would be like over like a few hundred thousand for this group or a few hundred thousand for that group. It would, or for the entire continent. I think like at one point it was like 200,000 for the Asian continent, like 120,000 for Europe. So then as we move into like the Cold War, what would happen is they had different acts and things that would happen. Like there was the 1945 War Brides Act, which granted, so after the war, there essentially was a lot of acts that would be passed of like, if your family member, like so different war, like Chinese American war veterans were able to bring their family members over. So there's this idea of keeping families together. So if essentially at this point, as we go into the 40s and even into the 50s, if you knew somebody, you could get in.
Okay.
But the idea was why originally Congress was okay with passing this was because there were so few Asian Americans at this time in the country that they thought, well, there's not that many of them.
What's
right?
a cousin so, or two?
Well, so they assumed that this act would actually just increase the movement from Europe. So it would just pretty much, you know, keep America white for more.
Oh, so they're thinking that they're bringing like their German cousins over.
Yep. And you know what? Did not happen because these folks were like, I got this auntie, this cousin, this person all coming over here. And you know what? You know why they're having to do that? Because you done fucked up their country, America.
Yes.
You went over to someone's house, kicked their
door
down.
Stomped all over it.
Took all their riches, was like, give me that, and I'm going to take this. And
meanwhile, saying, America's the best. America's awesome. Of course you want to go to that awesome and best place ever.
Because when you're at their house taking all their shit, you're also telling them how amazing your own goddamn house is. So then the people are going to be like, well, can I come see this house? You taking my shit? Can I go take a look over there too? I'm going to ride this boat or this plane and get over there. I just want to work this little small little job over here. Is that okay?
Right. And then America's like, no, fuck you.
Yeah. So you also had like a lot of different and also a lot of the immigration was also coming through from refugees. So you had refugees from the Vietnam War, Korean War, Cambodia, Laos. Again, all things that like we done fucked it up, right? So a lot of these folks were coming in from these different places. And so Ford and Carter signed a lot of executive orders to push past the quotas because the quotas were only allowing for so many people to be able to come in. So they
good.
Had to sign executive orders for
let more people all in.
Yeah, because these people are in danger, because it's like you started that fire over there and these people need out. You helped create this chaos over there.
Let me get out of it.
So around this time, around through like the 50s and 60s, as different laws were being changed, they also got more stringent on sort of you kind of had to have a job to be able to come over here. So there would have to, an employer would have to say, oh, Aneke's going to come over here and work in my, like at my company or my factory or something. So they started cracking down a little bit. They started cracking down on, if you had a family member, there was a process and a pathway for you to get here. It was probably the easiest way. That's how a lot of women, came over here, because their husbands were already over here or whatnot.
Right. Yeah. So
that was their pathway to there. Employers had to write a document, and there was even different quotas. Or they had to write a document saying, like, okay, she can come over here and work, or he can come over
like
there
like a work permit kind of thing.
Essentially, that's
work
how that
visa,
kind of,
I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of how that sort of birthed there. But anyways, once you were here, all of these folks from these Asian countries had a clear pathway to naturalization. They all had, and this is throughout this entire time period. If at any point you were able to legally come over here, you also had hand in hand a pathway to naturalization.
Okay, so if you're here, you can become an American.
Yep. So it's interesting. So then we get to the myth of the model minority. And as I was, you know, coming through this information, it was sort of just like, well, of course, I see where that's coming from. This idea, this idea that is also coined by white folks.
Yes.
The model minority. I forget the name of the guy, but I don't even want to continue giving his name power or anything. But he coined this idea pretty much back in the 60s. Here you had, and this is in the 60s, right? So he pointed out, he was like, Japanese Americans are some of the most, you know, successful that we have here, even though we put them in internment camps. And he's like, you know, they should still have all this emotional trauma from that, but yet they're still able to make it work. Meanwhile, he says, like, the Negro.
I hate this guy. That's exactly what I was afraid of.
But he's like, you know, and so that's, so you have, because there's this paradox.
Right.
Look at all these, you know, Asian folks were able to make it. Why can't the black people do, why can't black folks do it in the same way?
Which is bullshit because of everything you just explained.
Well, yeah. And so, you know, there's been there's a lot of great Asian American writers and, you know, professors and stuff who are just trying to debunk this model minority, you know, myth, essentially, because, you know, there is on the one sense, OK, they came over the quote unquote, you know, right way. But let's start from the very beginning. How did black folks come to this nation?
Stolen and forced to work for free until death.
For centuries. And this wasn't just like a period of time. This was for centuries. And so it's like, even when you had like the blockades against, you know, specific Asian American countries at different times, it was like for decades. It wasn't even for more than a century, right? So there wasn't even enough time for that to get really seeped in. And I know that there were horrific conditions that, you know, Chinese immigrants worked during, things like the construction of the railroad.
Saying that the plight was we're not trying to compare. We're just telling stories.
Right. Yeah. And just to sort of debunk this idea of the model minority and where it came from. And also one of one of the writers I was reading, you know, brought up the point that, you know, Asia's hella diverse. It's not monolithic. Yes. It's hella diverse. And so, you know, Japanese Americans have done really well, but apparently Bhutanese Americans have far higher rates of poverty than other Asian populations, right? So it's not like it's one thing across the board. And then you also have to look at like how specific America was in selecting and allowing different Asian cultures.
Right.
Not only were they able to come here, but their pathway to citizenship, right?
Right, exactly. And the way that
they were even treated when they got here, like they were still seen as human in certain ways. Sure, there was still different racism and stuff that was happening, but like black folks down in the South, like, and last week we talked about the tests that were done on black folks, from the Tuskegee study to, you know, Venus Hottentot, right? Like, or Sarah Bartman, where for so long we were seen as other and inferior. And sure, they did that back in World War II with the Japanese to try to paint fear into the eyes of the Americans when they thought about the Japanese. I think it just was not at the same level or the same way that it happened with black folks in America.
Right. And I really want to emphasize the fact that we're debunking the myth of the model minority because it is patronizing. It is incredibly, this is being named something by the other. Like, oh, bravo to you. Like, it is going without context. It is comparing and essentially doing what you were talking about before, where they essentially were pitting races against each other. Calling one group a model minority is, in fact, pitting it against other minorities. So
And that was the idea, because honestly, like, Aneke, like, if you're coming into, like, a strange place, like, it's human nature that if someone gives you a slight pass and a slight title and a slight privilege, you're probably gonna take it. Literally, survival instincts take it
to survive.
Right? So you have these communities coming in, and you see the way this other group of people are being treated. You don't want to be lumped in with that, right? So you go your pathway, you do your thing, and
I hate to say this because it's so depressing to say this, but I said this yesterday when I was out to lunch. But no, whenever somebody comes to this country, they are trying to distance themselves from being Black. Let's just say the truth. Because Black people were brought here as slaves. They were brought here as subordinates, as not people, as inhuman, as chattel. They were granted humanity. Gee, thank you, America. And then we've constantly been trying to work our way up from that. So now if you're coming here to America and you're facing your own type of discrimination, you're going to try and separate yourself by being like, look, I'm not that, though.
Yep,
and that, I think, is the plight of America, and that's where the model minority comes from, I think.
You even see this in the LGBT community, of circling back to the thing of, like, why some, you know, folks don't like seeing effeminate men on TV, because they're like, that's not me. I'm the, you know, the model homosexual, right? The
right,
one who
right.
doesn't put their gayness in their face, and it's not like mm-hmm. they want the kids and the marriage and the same thing of, like, whatever, quote-unquote, the status quo normality
right.
is. So you see that, like, I mean, we as human beings, we're tribes folk, we're community folks, we're pack creatures, right? So we want to belong, we want to feel loved, and we want to feel safe. So
yes,
again, if someone's granting you power or some privilege and a pass, you're gonna, like, for survival, you're gonna want to, people take it. So I understand that.
Yeah.
So conservative, mm-hmm. So Janelle Wong, she's the director of Asian American Studies at the University of Maryland. Mm-hmm. She's wrote a lot of stuff about this and has been an author on the issue. And she had even named and said that it was a conservative strategy. And she said, on one point, you're ignoring the role that selective recruitment of highly educated Asian immigrants has played in Asian American success, followed by, secondly, mm-hmm. making a flawed comparison between Asian Americans and other groups, particularly Black Americans, to argue that racism, including more than two centuries of Black enslavement, can be overcome by hard work and strong family values.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. All the snaps.
Yeah. So I just kind of, it was interesting because as I was doing the research on the history of immigration, it started making me kind of put the dots together of, like, where that theory of the model minority had come from. You had a different path to citizenship and to being here in America and to being humanized, because you really, your humanity was never really lost. I still to this mm-hmm. day don't understand how Japanese Americans have forgiven the U.S.
I would be fucking pissed as shit.
All day, every day.
Yeah.
Used the only country that ever had a nuclear weapon used against it. And then mm-hmm. families who were put into camps. That is, you know,
who
but they
were
say
American. Let's who were not American. Like, that's the thing that, and even if you weren't American, it's shameful. But the fact that it was purely based on race/nationality is disgusting. And meanwhile, I had no idea that at the same time that FDR was signing this law to intern Japanese Americans, he was being like, oh, hey, Chinese Americans, come on over. You know, like, it just goes to show that, like you said, it's all based in money and it's all based in perception and racism. And like, that's just what it boils down to.
Even all the wars that we got involved into, it's all about money. You know, if it's not about, like, can we help the specific country? What can you do for us? And it sickens to my stomach. And it really broke my heart to, you know, read and see how, you know, Asian Americans were able, like, where you had Black folks who still weren't able to have the right to vote and who were treated like dogs through police brutality and just mm-hmm. for centuries. It kind of broke my heart. Whereas folks who were already born here, weren't given that same thing that you could give because you've given it to other people. So that was important to sort of look at there. And Frank mm-hmm. Chin said this back in, 1974, he said, whites love us because we're not Black. Mm. Sort of that, just sort of like, well, you're not that thing that I, you know, hate so much over there. I do want to give a shout out to, I'm going to pronounce your name wrong. You're one of our corner kids.
Try it out.
Jaywon. Jaywon K.
All right.
And you posted about the, you did a few different posts about the Model Minority Mutiny, which is a group that was being, I think you're in Baltimore. So it's the Baltimore Asian Resistance and Solidarity Group. And they said, they have this, the group, I think they had a meeting and they were talking about how culturally stereotyped in the U.S. is the model minority. People of Asian backgrounds are expected to be smart, wealthy, hardworking, and docile. The model minority myth is full of contradictions, painting Asian Americans as basically white, encouraging complicity with the white supremacy and excluding Asian and Pacific Islanders Americans by perceiving them as perpetual foreigners. API people fighting anti-blackness and white supremacy are often erased from history, while the media pushes narratives about Asian-black tension, fueling hostility between people of color. This event, and so they had an event that was going to explore that, and there are groups out there that are working to dismantle this, because it's been something that we've been pitted against each other, and it's time to start looking at how this all came about and really seeing our unifications and coming together here.
Oh, I love it. I love this so much. The more that we separate ourselves, the less power we have and less we have to gain. The more that we come together and fight systematic racism, fight sexism, fight homophobia, fight all of the different things that affect all of us, even if you're not a part of that group, it still affects you. It still ricochets onto you. The more power we have.
So the more informed we, then inform yourself with knowledge, my librarian lady friend would also say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And get nasty with that knowledge.
Ooh, that's a good tag.
Get nasty with knowledge.
Right, we are in my corner.
Yo, nasty, nasty corner. Yo, nasty, nasty. Oh, see, that's weird if I say it, but if you were like, we're in my nasty, nasty corner, like, because
you're calling my corner nasty. But I mean, my corner.
Yeah,
my corner is gonna be pretty nasty. It's not fun.
Oh,
everybody. Oh, it's like the real
you're going old school, like the old school definition of nasty, where it is like, this is a nasty thing that's happening.
It sucks. Exactly. Exactly.
It's not fun. It's not sexy.
Right.
So you are gonna get nasty, but it's a different kind.
Less fun. But okay, so let me start this off with The Handmaid's Tale, which we've talked about a little bit on this podcast.
We dabbled.
It lately has been rubbing me a little weird. So just for a refresher, it was a book written in 1986 by Margaret Atwood. Has now been turned into a television show on Hulu, starring Elizabeth from...
Hurley. Banks.
No, but from Mad Men. Anyway, she's excellent.
Berkeley.
No.
No, that's Jesse Spano. Could you imagine if they gave her? You think she auditioned?
Oh, God. Poor Elizabeth Berkeley. Anyway, so.
I'm so excited.
I'm so scared. So the tale is basically a dystopian future called Gilead, where women have lost all rights. They are put into different categories. You're either a wife, which is high up, like lead wife, an econo wife, which is like you're just like a regular Joe Schmo wife, just scraping along. You're not allowed to read. There are Marthas that clean the house, aunts that control people, and then handmaidens, which are basically walking uterus because it's in the future, so people are having less babies. So handmaidens have working uteruses, and so higher ups have sex with handmaidens in order to repopulate the country. That is Handmaid's Tale in a nutshell, right?
Gotcha. Okay.
So the thing that I've been kind of irritated with is because a lot of people have been saying like, ooh, this is like now. Ooh, imagine if this happened now. Oh my God, Trump is our president. It's going to happen now. You know, like, everybody has a right to be scared of what could happen in the future, our rights being taken away as women. But also, I feel like it's a little insulting because in order for you to pay attention to these issues, it has to happen to white Americans in a fictitious, like a fic- fiction. Ooh, when this damn. Has happened and is happening all over the world, women are constantly mm-hmm. losing their rights when a religious power takes over. Women are constantly being kidnapped. Women, they're black women and Latino women are being kidnapped on a daily basis. Like, there's a whole movement. There, like, I mean, think about Iran. There was a revolution that happened where women lost some of their rights. There is Boko Haram, who just, like, kidnapped, like, 20 teenage girls. So a lot of this stuff is happening. So it makes me a little irritated that the only reason that people are talking about it is because this television show came out.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, it reminds me of, like, you know, young black girls get kidnapped all the time.
Right.
By one white girl falls down the well and the whole world is
stops,
you know, alerted. I know. And I feel bad for that poor white girl.
Yeah, it sucks.
You know,
we're not saying it sucks, that it's not, like, it's not a good thing when a white girl gets kidnapped. Not at all. It's terrible. But the fact that the attention is poured over this one girl when there's like 10 black girls that have been kidnapped and nobody gives a fuck, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. my corner, I read an article on, by this woman, Beth Elderkin, on this blog that I read. It's called I09. And it's funny because...
Oh, I've heard of it.
Yes, because...
They sometimes do some science-y stuff.
Yes, it's all about science and science fiction. So I thought it was kind of cool that they decided to, one, dabble in science fiction, because that's what Handmaid's Tale is, but add mm-hmm. some legit, real facts to the story. Ooh. So I'm going to bring it back to America and current America. I'm going to okay. read 10 laws that are happening, that are still happening now, currently. And they pretty much mirror what's going on in Handmaid's Tale. It's not fiction. It's true. These are real laws that are in effect on the law books in certain states right now as we're speaking.
So you're actually, Handmaid's Tale is actually a documentary.
I mean, in some of these laws.
It's like a biopic, essentially. Yeah, you're like, oh, that'd be so scary if that happened. It already is. It's happening.
Pay attention.
Well, let's hear it as Liz.
All right. So the first one.
I'm scared.
Cohabitation punishment. Mm. So in The Handmaid's Tale, couples weren't legitimate unless they were married. The Gilead, which is the country that is The Handmaid's Tale, government.
Dumb name.
What? Well, yeah, I mean, it's stupid.
Name is stupid.
But Gilead government went so far as to invalidate all second marriages as adultery. So in the U.S., there are still two states where it's illegal to live with someone before you are married. Under Mississippi law, if a man and a woman are proven to be living together and having habitual sexual intercourse, they can be fined up to $500 each and sentenced to 6 months in jail. And in Michigan, a state that's trying to overturn the law, you can get up to a year in jail. So
they tried to overturn this in Conant?
They're still trying. They're currently trying.
Damn, how?
Yeah.
How?
Right?
I mean, so, I thought it was like one of those things they just kind of forgot that it was there, but they're trying to overturn it and they can't overturn it.
Yeah. So the reason that a lot of these laws are still on the books and a lot of people are fighting to keep them is that you can use them as sort of like a seatbelt tax. Like, one, before same-sex couples were able to get married, this would be used on them. Saying, oh, you're cohabitating punishment. This is another,
right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a way to get rid of people you don't like. Like, right. If I don't like, you know, my neighbor over there, I've been trying to get her, she's trying to run against me for PTA, I'm going to say she's living with her boyfriend. Get her arrested. Bye.
Exactly. And that happens. Sad, but true. Damn. So number two, funerals for fetuses. So last year, Pence, who is currently our vice president, when he was a governor, he signed a law that was called With a Prayer that demanded all aborted or miscarried fetuses get buried or cremated, which has been criticized for doing nothing except mentally torturing the women affected. The law is now shared with Texas and Louisiana, though they had trouble enacting it thanks to holdups in court. So thank goodness, there are people fighting these laws, but literally our vice president currently signed a law that demands women bury and or cremate their aborted or miscarried fetuses. That's mental warfare.
Yeah, that is, Oh, you, sidebar real quick. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the production company of Moms. Oddly produced by What's-His-Face, who also did that awful... Two Men and a Baby. No, what's that one show on CBS?
Oh, Two Broke Girls.
No, that one. Yeah, Chuck Lorre. Is it Chuck Lorre?
Yeah, Chuck Lorre. Chuck Lorre.
So he also produced the one with called Moms that has Mom that has Anna Faris.
Yes.
And I forget her name.
Allison Janney? Like really big.
Yes, who's amazing. Yeah. Who my therapist used to be really best friends with her. Anyways, uh-huh. She was also once told that she looked like an alien and couldn't get a job.
Ew.
Anyways,
okay.
And look at her now. But anyways, they're not using any of their money to campaign for the Emmys. They're putting all of their money uh-huh. towards giving all their money to organizations for female reproductive rights.
Good. So I love it. Yeah. I love it. Go Mom, which is good because of
the resistance.
This next law, they need their help. Yeah. So, Roe versus Wade, which is the lawsuit that allowed abortions to become legal. Right?
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
So, yeah. At least 6 states in the United States have a so-called trigger law, which are laws on standby to make abortion illegal in the state as soon as Roe versus Wade is overturned.
Holy shit.
And some of these states include Arkansas, Kansas, and Missouri. So literally, damn. They have a law waiting. So as soon as Roe versus Wade is overturned, boom, abortion is illegal.
Like, boom, it's in there. Mm-hmm. Tricky, tricky, tricky.
Yeah.
The Republican Party is a crafty, cunning
bitch.
Motherfucker. Like, Democrats ain't got that shit going on.
Like, that's some shady, scary shit. That's some shady, scary shit.
It is. They are amped and ready. I don't know how you get that organized. Like, I don't know how.
Here's one that's not fun. So making vibrators and sex toys illegal.
Fuck off. I'm out of here. I refuse. Oh, fuck
God.
You.
People don't
give
like
me the
fun.
List. I'm getting my pen out. Give me the list okay. of those states because I am gonna go over there right now.
And he is for reals getting his pen out. He has
give me their
pen.
Names.
He has his notepad.
Give me their names.
Okay, so in a few states like Alabama and Georgia, it's okay. still illegal to buy sex toys. Alabama's ban targets all toys that are primarily for the stimulation of human genital organs in order to preserve public morality. So basically they're saying if it doesn't help create a baby, it has no purpose, which is exactly what Handmaiden's Tale is all about. The only reason that you have sex is that you have a baby, not for fun, which is stupid because we all know it feels good for fun as well. In Georgia specifically, you're only allowed to buy sex toys if it's needed medically or educationally.
You gotta get like a hall pass to get a vibrator or some sex toys. I need
and who
this.
Wants to do that?
But you know what, you just say like I'm depressed, I need this, and there you go.
Yeah,
but
that's
you shouldn't
true.
Have to I shouldn't have to get my you sexual should... pleasure approved
right.
by nobody.
Exactly. And they're making it dangerous. Just like how if abortion was illegal, people would go into backroom doors, you know, the whole like scary, deadly, awful shit, because people are going to do it anyways. If you don't make vibrators and sex toys illegal, then you're going to have people using foreign objects, sticking them in them, which are not healthy, aren't safe, aren't plastic, like soft and perfect. So you never know what can of worms you're opening up just because you want to preserve public morality. Morality. Who cares about your public morality?
And I bet the person who passed it has put their plunger in a lot of different places that if we only knew, people are going to figure out how to get off. It is one of our, the universe
right.
has given us this amazing thing. Get out of right. my face. How do we get that law overturned? We need to talk to somebody. That's some bullshit.
We need to talk to somebody. Alabama, Georgia, get ready.
Ugh.
Okay, so... Number 5, denial of permanent birth control. So some women in Kentucky have reported that doctors turned them away for wanting to get their tubes tied or tubal ligation.
What?
They were younger than 25 years old. If they were younger than 25 years old, unless they already had at least 3 kids, which is like somebody making a decision for you, for your body.
They're like, no, you're going to keep having babies.
Right. This is a response shared across several states like Illinois and Colorado, where women are routinely denied permanent birth control. Until the 70s, women legally needed their husband's permission to get tubal ligation, but that was challenged and overturned. So thank goodness that was taken away in the 1970s. But like,
husband,
what the fuck?
Can I please not have to go through this I can't imagine. My hat goes off to all you ladies who've had the babies, because I get a paper cut and I'm like, this is the worst thing in the world. I can't imagine pushing a life through, and I bet it's terrifying sometimes. Like, it is, like, I can't even imagine that experience. So
it's like, if you don't want to have a baby, you should be allowed to go through the things that will prevent you from having a baby, instead of some doctor that you don't even know making a decision for your body for you.
Who doesn't know what that experience is even like? Then you have the goddamn fucking baby.
Right, exactly. Okay, here's a fun one. Number 6.
I don't believe
getting
you.
Fired for sexually arousing your boss.
Stop it! What is this?
So in 2010...
You gave me a boner, Aneka. You get out of here.
You're fired. Basically, listen to the story. So in 2010, a dental assistant filed a gender discrimination lawsuit against her former boss, who fired her because he was attracted to her. He reportedly told her he'd get erections if her outfits were too revealing, even though she mostly wore scrubs and a t-shirt. She also said that she never reciprocated his advances. Iowa is an at-will state, meaning employees can be fired at any time for any reason, so long as it's not based on federally protected reasons like race, religion, age, or gender. But unfortunately, the male judge of this case, he thought gender wasn't an issue when it came to the case of being sexually attracted, and dismissed it on the grounds that the boss was simply trying to protect his marriage.
I wonder if they would have been the same thing if it was like this guy fired some other guy because he gave him an erection. Would the judge have said the same thing? You know, like if he was like, you get out of here because you're giving me dudes, give me a dude boner, you know?
Either way, control your boner.
Oh, I know, but I'm just saying that, like, it's such a scapegoat to be like, oh, gender has nothing to do with it. He's just trying to protect his marriage, but like...
Still, it's fucked up. It's a fucked up way to fire anybody, you know?
Not defending it. I'm just saying
It's just interesting. I don't know. I have no idea. Mm. It probably would turn into something... Well, who knows? The world is fucked up.
I bet you that guy would have gotten... The guy who got fired would have been arrested because they would have been like, you made his boner gay.
Yeah, you never... Right? Who knows? Especially if they're... these laws have led me to believe anything is possible.
This is also... I know we haven't even finished yet, but this is all the more reason that y'all gotta run for office. Y'all got to run for office because there are some crazy motherfuckers who power corrupts and they're passing whatever the fuck they want. And this is some bullshit.
Listen to this one. This one's pretty tough. This one I think is probably one of the worst ones. So 7, forced parental rights for rapists. So right now, women in 7 states can be forced to share parental custody with their accused or convicted rapist. And efforts to repeal those laws have continued to fail. The latest example is in Maryland, where a rape victim had to negotiate with their accused rapist for custody rights and also had to get permission from them to put the children up for adoption.
That is insane. I know. That's insane. God, I'm so sorry, women.
It's fucked up. So 8. This one's a little bit more silly. So
give me a silly one. I am.
Like, I mean, it's fucked up. The whole wall. All of these are terrible.
All of it is terrible.
But this one is.
Can I get one that's more of an eye roll?
Needing a permit to wear high heels.
There we go. Yeah.
God, what? It's like we can't do anything.
It sounds like a pickup line. Excuse me, ma'am. Do you got a permit to wear those high heels? Because you looking hot.
No, fuck you. Leave me alone.
I'm about to write you a sexy ticket. So, that's what that seems like.
In the city of Carmel by the Sea, California.
Looking at you.
Women have to get a permit.
Stop.
Women have to get a permit from City Hall if they plan to wear high heels above 2 inches. Or if the stiletto is less than 1 square inch wide. The city claims it's so they can protect themselves against lawsuits in the effect that the woman falls. At least that's been the defense since it was first created in 1920s. This law needs to get off the books. It was created in 1920s.
What? That is... I can't even with that one. All I can do is just laugh. Whoever you are in Carmel, you need to get the referendum, get the papers out. Some police officer could write you a ticket. And wouldn't that be a bitch? You'd have to go to
court. I'd be pissed. I'd be like, this is stupid.
Can't wear high heels. Don't wear high heels to the court case because they give you another ticket.
I hate you and this is stupid.
They maybe even put you in contempt, hold you in jail because you wore the high heels.
Ah, I hate it. Okay, 2 more, and then I'm done. 9, Women cannot revoke consent for sex even when it becomes violent. So a loophole in North Carolina's state law on sex and consent, set by a 1979 state Supreme Court case, says that it is not considered rape if a woman agreed to sex initially, even if she later revokes her consent, even if her partner becomes violent. The case was recently cited to reduce Jonathan Wayne Guy's sentence from second-degree rape to a misdemeanor assault, giving him only 10 months in jail. Amy Guy, the victim who agreed to sex with her estranged husband but begged him to stop after he became violent, has pledged to try and keep the law get the law changed. There have been attempts over the years, and the many lawmakers agree it should be fixed, but sadly nothing has happened.
What?
Okay, here's the last one. So employers can continue to pay women less if they were doing so.
Oh.
So last month, an appeals court ruled that women could legally be paid less than men based on differences in their previous salaries, overturning a previous ruling that stated women's pay should be reevaluated because earlier salaries are traditionally lower than men's due to systematic gender bias. The California teacher's lawyer said that they're still planning the next step, but he could see the case going to the U.S. Supreme Court. So basically, this means that we all agree that there has been gender bias in the past, mm-hmm. which has resulted in women getting paid less, 80 cents to the male dollar. It has been appealed. So saying, oh, well, if you already were paying women less, that's fine. Just keep doing it.
I mean, you're already doing it, so why change anything? Aneke, if it's not broke, don't fix it, is what the government
is
saying.
It's broke! Fix it!
But then they're like, but my paycheck is fine, so I don't understand what your problem is.
Like, it's ridiculous.
I'm good. What's your problem?
Right! So for all the people out there who are like, ooh, handmade in sales, so spooky, 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 it's happening now! It's happening right now, and these are the little cuts, the little paper cuts that add to death. So let's fight it while it's still in the paper cut phase. Let's acknowledge that women across the world are dealing with discrimination that is very handmaiden-like, and let's refocus that. Watch the show, enjoy the show, but also know that there's a reality that is happening right now around the world. There is a reality that's happening in our laws that are hidden in the law books that you wouldn't even imagine. They're still there and still being placed against people who are disadvantaged. It's a tack on. So let's use entertainment as a mode for action.
And change. Don't just like watch the show, eat that popcorn, and call it a day.
Right.
This is the year of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
People of the world. Every boy and every girl. Colors of the world. Change the shit.
Slice of your life.
Oh, yeah. Vote up your life. Referendum your life.
Oh, yeah. I like that. Yeah? I like that. That's good.
Hot seat, yeah. Go vote.
I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa. And we host the weekly comedy podcast, One Bad Mother.
We celebrate our moments of parenting genius.
As well as our failures.
Just like, we're going to have hot dogs. And I'm like, no, we're having fun. Everybody loves hot dogs.
Yeah.
And it just like smashes that thing right on my chest. And then I'm just crying in the middle of like kids' space while people are like literally dancing with their children.
Parenting can be sad and painfully funny at the same time.
So join us each week as we admit that this is hard, but we're getting really good at it.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Quizlet Corner, Quizlet Corner, Quizlet, 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 Quizlet Corner.
Damn. Still being like, I'm sorry, ladies. That's all I can think about. Just want to apologize.
Well, you know, it's okay.
You could be arrested for just living your best life, wearing some heels, trying not to get raped. Yep.
Yes.
All right. Well, got to try to turn this around. Aneke, this is really quick and really simple.
Okay.
One of these isn't true. That's it. Oh, that's all you got to do. And okay, that's it. And you don't need you don't need a permit to guess this. You can just
I'm not wearing high heels, so okay, we don't have to worry.
Well, we have to be careful if we go down to Carmel for our annual Carmel episode. Okay.
I know, or when we cohabitate, who knows, might
be
arrested.
Be careful. Be careful. Or if you give me a boner.
Stop. Okay. Okay, okay, okay. What is it?
All right, one of these isn't true. One of them's not true. Did you ask which one is it? You've got to guess. Okay. So, Levi's announced a new line of jeans that are apparently inspired by the AIDS Memorial quilt. No. Could be true. Could be not true. Could be not true. Blathering Blath Strike, Lin-Manuel Miranda joins the cast of DuckTales.
Oh, okay.
As Gizmo Duck.
Okay.
Could be not true, could be not true. Mike Pence tweeted he wants a horse inside of him.
Oh my God.
Could be true, could not be true. Johnny Depp really campaigned to have a female villain in Pirates because he thought having a male villain would be redundant.
Mm-hmm,
could be true, could be not true. There's a last one. Gook, there's a GoFundMe page for homophobic sports star Ryan Getzel.
I know which one is not true.
Which one is not true?
There was going to be a female villain in the latest installment of Pirates of the Caribbean, but Johnny Depp and his late weird self decided not to have it and petitioned against it.
Get out of my face, Johnny Depp. You won, by the way. But Johnny Depp, get out of my face. Get out of my face. He said, and I quote, the original writer for this movie no one asked for. Like, no one asked for more Pirates of the Caribbean. And he said, in my version of Dead Man Tales was set aside because it featured a female villain. Johnny Depp was worried that that would be redundant because of Dark Shadows, where he had a female villain there. So it's like, well, we've already, he's like, I've already done that. We've already seen that. So why would I do it again?
Let's just have another man like we always have another man. Like, get out of here, Johnny Depp.
It would have been the one thing that actually would have drawn me to go see that movie is if there was some, you know who could have been? That female pirate that you talked about last week, the Chinese female pirate. Ching Ai Sao,
yes. That would have been fucking tight.
Would have been tight, would have been amazing. Johnny Depp, get out of my face.
Johnny Depp is the worst, and the worst is that there's four movies based off of a ride.
That's true. I know. About Eddie, you know Eddie Murphy's like, damn it. Because he did that Haunted Mansion movie.
And that flopped so hard.
Country Bears
flopped. Another. Why do people are latching on to this stupid ass Pirates ride?
It was like, yeah, they were like, this ride is everything. It's out of control.
I mean, the ride is pretty fun.
It's kind of boring. I mean, my favorite part is when we're driving by the people in the restaurant eating that delicious food, and you're like, I want to go eat at that restaurant. And then you do. It's a giant commercial for that fucking restaurant.
It's a beautiful restaurant, but the food is overpriced.
Well, welcome to eating at Disneyland. So you won. I do want to say, I think next week or one of the weeks coming up, I'm going to do the history of the AIDS Memorial quilt because we need to learn about it because companies are trying to profit, like Pepsi, off of these beautiful movements and things that mean something.
I know. And when, like, we Pepsi need to did do with the real
Kylie
thing.
Kylie Jenner, was it her?
It was Kendall. And did you notice that they stole our catchphrase? You join the conversation.
Which we stole from Lily Tomlin and Frace and Granky. But how? Yeah. Frace and Granky? Gracie and Frankie? Yes.
I like Frank and Grace. Yeah, Grace and Frankie. Yeah.
Granky and Frank. Well, fuck Pepsi. Where is my lawyer? Lawsuit, here they come. Could you imagine if we went up against Pepsi?
We're like, excuse me, sir. We've been saying join the conversation to no
avail. Since we watched that episode of Grace and Frankie.
Oh, what a stupid commercial. But the AIDS blanket is really important. I don't know how I feel about AIDS blanket pants, but...
Oh, no, I'm against it. I brought this up because I wanted to say... Fuck you, Levi's. This is some bullshit. Maybe someone behind the scenes is connected to this. Like, I don't know the full story, but anytime there's like a company trying to profit. Off of, like, if the funds are fully going towards, you know, HIV and AIDS, like research. Or this, or the AIDS quilt, maybe, but I don't think it is. So,
yeah. I mean, I will support it if it's more than 30% going to AIDS. Or HIV research or prevention, like, all the or education.
Of it. I feel like there should be no profit. Like, break even on these goddamn pants and get the rest of it too as well. I just love that Mike Pence.
He's the worst.
Fuck, he's at the worst. And I love that he tweeted that he wants a horse inside of him. And you know, the internet never forgets.
Never
he
went does.
To town on that. And it was like a picture of him standing next to a horse. And he's just like, I want a horse. He said, I've often said there's nothing better for the inside of a man and the outside of a horse. He said that he was quoting President Ronald Reagan, but apparently it's probably from Winston Churchill. And it's a dumb quote from a dumb man.
Oh my God.
There it is.
I hate it.
Death by Horsecock, starring Mike Pence, coming to the internet near you.
Hi, this is Griffin McElroy.
Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
And we're the hosts of Rose Buddies. It's a podcast about the Bachelor family of products.
We watch The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, and Bachelor in Paradise.
Yes, it is garbage television, but we're the king and queen of this garbage pile. We're the raccoons in charge around here.
So join us on Tuesdays.
Because the TV show's on Mondays. And basically, we'll recap what we saw, and we'll just sort of scoop the garbage around us and make a little fort out of it.
No viewing required.
But it's a good TV show. What are you doing?
Anake!
Yes!
Did you get nasty this week?
I think we got nasty.
I think we got nasty with it. We got nasty with it. Not. And you know, we did both ends of the nasty spectrum.
We did.
The yin and the yang of the nasty.
We were nasty and nasty.
You got it both ways today. We got nasty in every which way that you possibly could. So there you go.
Okay, so remember, we do Jumbotrons, you guys.
Jumbotrons.
So we will say whatever you want us to say.
It can be nasty,
just
not
go
nasty.
To max. Yeah, maximumfun.org/Jumbotron. Look for us. Ooh. And then fill out all the forms there.
And we'll do our whatever. We'll say what all the things that you want to say. Sidebar, mm-hmm. What happens if I go to nasty.com?
I don't want to know.
Okay. What else?
Are you going there?
I am going there. How did you know?
You made a face. Just a bunch of dicks.
Oh, no. Don't go. I mean, it's not that bad. It's kind of tasteful. I don't know what's going on in the background there, but it says it's the kink positive community. So there you go.
Oh, okay. That sounds.
Fetish.com did some research here, live research for y'all. Fetish.com bought nasty.com. So when you go to nasty.com, you're automatically directed to fetish.com.
Oh, so it's a little bait and switch.
As they do, they got nasty with their URLs.
Hey, you know what? They did what they had to do in this information age.
Do you. Holding it down. Could do other things with us.
Yeah, I was going to say, do what you got to do in the information age. And go to Twitter. And we're there. Minority Corner with a
Get
K.
Get nasty with us on Twitter.
We are on Facebook. Both as we have a page, like the page. And then also join the group.
Get nasty there, too.
Get Corner nasty. Kids Playground. Get all nasty. With K's. What else?
That's it. Oh, Aneka's gonna be at Maximum Fun Con West coming up June 11th.
And 9th through 11th, I'll be teaching a class. If you want to take my class, sign up if you're already going to Max Fun Con. I won't know anybody, so if you see like an awkward lady sitting by the pool, that's probably me.
Come say hi to her. Be like, what up? Just whisper
I'll be
her
missing
ear.
My one half
Get
of James.
Nasty. I know, yeah. You know what? We're going to send you a cardboard cutout of me, so that way I'm always right there by your side.
That's not going to make me even more weird and awkward than I already am.
They're like, come on, Aneka, we're going to go hang out by the campfire. You're like, hold on, let me get my cardboard cutout of James.
James is getting ready.
They're like, geez, it's crazy.
They'll hate me.
Oh, man. And I want it to be me holding maracas.
Sure. Okay. Why not? Let's make it even weirder.
Yeah, let's go for it.
You got to have one with you, too, at Max FunCon
East.
Oh,
yeah. I want one of you, like, holding it down.
I'm going to be holding a raccoon.
Holding a raccoon in, like, the Wonder Woman pose, because it's like you're doing it, like, with boss
Yeah, I'm going to have my hands on my hips, and within one of my arms on my hips will be a raccoon, a fat, joyous raccoon smiling.
And I kind of want you, saddled on like a giant book that has like rainbow magic coming out of the butt of the book.
Too much.
What? Now it's too much. The raccoon and the cardboard cutout of you, that's just fine.
Tasteful.
But okay.
Tasteful.
Okay. All right. You got a permit for that raccoon, young lady?
I don't.
Jeez. All right. I think that's it. I think that's all our things.
Yay!
Thank you so much.
Have a good week, everybody.
Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't done so, also, we love getting reviews on iTunes. Actually, when you do that, it helps other people to be able to find our show so we can spread the word and the gospel of Minority Corner.
Oh, my God. And please keep spreading the word. Keep sharing the tales. Keep sharing the tunes. And create this community.
Yeah. Y'all are beautiful. I mean you too, Aneke.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Of you course. Too. You're beautiful. You're beautiful to me.
Get
that
nasty.
That sounds about a stalker.
Oh.
Okay.
Next week, we'll get into that.
Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.